People don't respect you just because you speak. They respect you when your words make sense, hit the point, and add something valuable to their life. Most people don't think about this. They talk without checking if the other person is even with them. They rush. They use weak words. They miss the moment to connect. Speaking smart isn't about sounding fancy. It's about making your words clear, matching your tone to the moment, and knowing when to slow down or hold your ground. It's about reading people, feeling their mood, and leaving them better than when you started talking. How to speak smart, master the psychology of powerful communication, is your step-by-step on how to do this every single time you open your mouth. These are skills you can use at work, at home, with friends, or in any important conversation. If you want people to listen, remember, and respect you, this is where you start. Chapter 1. Speak only after you know exactly what matters most. When you open your mouth to speak, the words you choose will either build your influence or weaken it. That's why before you say anything, you need to know exactly what matters most in that moment. Communication is not just about making noise. It's about delivering something valuable. Every conversation, every meeting, every talk is an opportunity to make an impact. But that impact depends entirely on whether you're clear about your purpose before you speak. If you don't take time to think through what matters most, you risk wandering through your words, and people will quickly tune out. Human attention is fragile. People have too many things competing for their focus. They will not fight to stay with you if they can't immediately sense that what you're saying is important. This is why you must decide, before a single word comes out, what your main point is and why it matters to the person listening. Imagine a lucky you. Think about the time someone has spoken to you without a clear direction. You could feel it, couldn't you? They started talking and you weren't sure where it was going. Maybe they used extra words that didn't help their point. Maybe they brought up details that didn't need to be there. By the end, you might have been more confused than when they began. That's not smart communication. That's noise. And noise never earns trust, respect, or influence. Now picture the opposite. Someone speaks, and from the first few seconds, you know they're clear. Every sentence they share moves toward one main point. You can follow them without effort. They're not rushing. They're not hesitating. They're guiding you. That kind of speaking makes people listen closely. It makes them remember you. It makes them take action. That's the difference between random talking and speaking smart. Knowing exactly what matters most is a discipline. It requires you to pause before you speak and ask yourself some honest questions. Why am I speaking right now? What's the one thing I want them to take away from this? What do they need to feel or understand by the end of my words? And perhaps the most important, what's at stake if I don't make this point clearly? When you train yourself to answer those questions before you speak, you start communicating with purpose. Purpose makes your words tighter, your tone more confident, and your delivery more effective. It also changes how people see you. They begin to trust you more because they see you value their time. You're not dumping random thoughts on them. You're giving them something worth listening to. In real life, we often speak too soon. We feel a need to fill silence, so we talk without preparation, or we react emotionally without taking a second to process what's really important. That's when mistakes happen. You might say something that distracts from your real point. You might share information that isn't necessary or that could even hurt your position. And once words leave your mouth, you can't pull them back. That's why the skill of knowing what matters most before speaking is a form of self-control. It's the mark of someone who respects themselves and respects others. If you're in a meeting at work and someone brings up a challenge, don't jump in with the first thought in your head. Hold back for a few moments. Listen to what's being said. Think about the end result you want. Do you want to solve the problem, inspire confidence, give direction, or simply share your perspective? Once you know the goal, you can build your response around that single focus. You'll notice you speak with fewer words, but those words will carry more weight. The same applies to personal conversations. If a friend comes to you with a problem, you might feel pressure to talk right away to make them feel better. But if you pause and think about what truly matters in that moment, maybe it's not advice, maybe it's understanding, your words will match their real need. That's how you strengthen relationships. You're not just talking, you're connecting. This principle also works in high-pressure moments. Imagine being asked a question in front of an audience. The instinct is to answer quickly to avoid silence. But that silence can be your advantage. If you take a breath and focus your mind on the single most important point you want to make, your answer will come out stronger. People respect a thoughtful response far more than a rushed one. There's also a psychological reason why speaking only after you know what matters most works so well. When you speak with clear intent, you project confidence. Humans are wired to respond to certainty. Even if they don't agree with you, they'll listen more closely because they can sense you know where you're going, and that certainty makes them more likely to believe in what you're saying. But clarity doesn't happen by accident. You have to build it into your daily life. You can practice it in small ways. Before you make a phone call, decide what the main point of that call is. Before you send a voice message, decide exactly what you want the person to hear. Before you walk into a conversation, remind yourself of the one thing you want to achieve. The more you do this, the more natural it becomes. Eventually, you won't just be a better speaker, you'll be a sharper thinker. Now, let's talk about what happens when you don't follow this rule. Without clarity, your words can cause misunderstandings. People may take your message in ways you didn't intend. They might get stuck on a minor detail and miss your main point entirely. Miscommunication can cost you opportunities, damage relationships, and reduce your influence. In business, unclear communication can lead to mistakes that cost money. In personal life, it can create tension that could have been avoided. On the other hand, when you speak only after knowing what matters most, you save time. Conversations become more productive. Meetings end with clear outcomes. Disagreements turn into problem-solving discussions because everyone understands the main focus. You also avoid the regret of saying something you wish you could take back. To build this habit, here's a practical approach. First, before speaking, mentally strip away every point that isn't essential. If it doesn't help the main message, don't include it. Second, choose words that are easy to understand. If your listener has to work too hard to figure out what you mean, they'll lose interest. Third, make sure your tone matches the importance of your message. If the topic is serious, speak with weight. If it's encouraging, let your energy reflect that. Another important element is to make sure what matters most to you also matters to them. Smart speaking is not just about pushing your own agenda, it's about connecting your purpose to their needs or interests. If you want someone to care, you have to show them why it matters in their world. This requires empathy. It requires you to think from their perspective before you speak. I've seen people transform their influence simply by applying this one skill. They became more respected at work because their contributions were sharp and relevant. They built stronger relationships because they listened and spoke with purpose. They were invited into bigger conversations because others knew they would add value, not waste time. It's also worth saying that this isn't about being silent out of fear. It's about being intentional. Some people hesitate to speak because they lack confidence, but that's not the same as waiting until you know what matters most. In fact, the clarity you get from this approach can build your confidence. When you know your point is strong and focused, you feel more certain delivering it. In the long run, this habit will change how people describe you. They'll say you're thoughtful. They'll say you're someone who always gets to the heart of the matter. They'll say your words carry weight. And when your words carry weight, people remember them, act on them, and share them. Speaking smart starts long before your lips move. It starts in your mind, in that quiet space where you decide what's worth saying and what's not. That decision is where real communication power lives. If you can make that decision every time, if you can train yourself to speak only after you know exactly what matters most, you will stand out in every room, every meeting, and every conversation. You will find that people give you their attention more freely. You will notice that they interrupt you less because they respect what's coming next. And you will experience fewer misunderstandings because your words will be clear and direct. This is not theory. This is practical daily communication mastery. So, before your next conversation, before your next meeting, before your next important call, stop for a moment. Stop. Ask yourself, what's the one thing that matters most here? Then build everything you say around that. If you make this your standard, you won't just speak smarter, you'll influence deeper, connect stronger, and lead better. And in today's world, that will serve you for life, for life. Chapter 2. Adjust your words so they match the other person. When you speak to someone, the way you choose your words will decide whether they understand you or lose interest. People have different ways of processing information. They have different experiences, different levels of knowledge, and different emotional states. If you want your message to land, you cannot deliver it the same way to every person. You have to adjust, you have to shape your words so they fit the person in front of you. This is not about pretending to be someone you're not. It's about respect, awareness, and effectiveness. It's about understanding that your responsibility as a communicator is not just to speak, but to be understood. The moment you open your mouth, you are either building a bridge or creating a gap. The bridge is built when you use language that the other person relates to, words they connect with, and a tone they can receive. The gap appears when you use language they cannot connect with, phrases they do not relate to, or a tone that creates distance instead of closeness. Smart communication is about building that bridge every single time. This requires paying attention. Before you speak, you have to observe. How does the person talk? Do they prefer straightforward and short sentences, or do they enjoy more detail? Do they speak formally, or do they keep it casual? Are they in a serious mood, or are they relaxed? These are not small details. They're signals that guide you in shaping your message. The better you read them, the better your communication will be. Think about when you've been in a conversation where the other person spoke in a way that felt far from how you naturally communicate. Maybe they were overly technical when you wanted simple answers. Maybe they were too casual when you were discussing something serious. You probably felt some frustration. That's exactly what happens when words don't match the person you're speaking to. The meaning gets lost, and so does the connection. The way you adjust your words also depends on the other person's knowledge about the topic. If they're new to what you're talking about, you don't flood them with complicated terms or industry jargon. That will make them feel excluded. Instead, you simplify without making them feel small. You focus on giving them clarity. But if you're speaking to someone experienced, you don't waste their time explaining basic things they already know. You acknowledge their level and communicate accordingly. This makes them feel respected and they stay engaged. It's also important to be aware of pace. Some people like fast-moving conversations. They want the main point right away. Others prefer a slower pace, giving them time to think. Matching their pace is just as important as matching your words. When you speak too fast to someone who needs time, they feel pressured. When you speak too slowly to someone who thinks quickly, they lose interest. Adjusting to their pace shows you value how they process information. This principle becomes even more important when you're speaking to different types of personalities. A highly analytical person wants facts, numbers, and logic. An emotional, people-oriented person responds better to stories, personal experiences, and how things affect people. A results-driven person wants to know the action steps and outcomes. A cautious person wants reassurance and details about risks. If you speak to each of these people in the same way, you will lose some of them. But if you match your words to their style, they will feel that you get them. That builds trust instantly. Matching your words is not only about content, but also about tone. If someone is serious about a subject and you respond in a light or joking manner, you create a disconnect. If someone is relaxed and casual and you respond with cold formality, they may feel judged or uncomfortable. The best communicators have the skill to read the atmosphere and respond with a tone that keeps the conversation balanced. There's also a listening element here. The more you listen, the more you can adjust. If you're too focused on what you're going to say next, you'll miss cues. You won't notice when their expression changes, when they lean forward, when their voice softens or hardens. Those are signs telling you whether your words are connecting or missing the mark. Observing them in real time allows you to adapt mid-conversation. That adaptability is what separates average communicators from exceptional ones. Sometimes adjusting your words means changing how much you say. Some people prefer a lot of detail before they feel confident about something. Others only want the core point and will ask for details if they need them. If you give too much information to someone who only wanted the basics, you lose their attention. If you give too little to someone who needs more, you leave them uncertain. Matching the amount of information to the person is one of the fastest ways to build understanding. Adjusting also means being mindful of the emotional state of the other person. If someone is upset, they are not in a position to process long explanations. They might not even hear half of what you say. In those moments, fewer words with a calmer tone are more powerful than an overload of information. If someone is enthusiastic, you can mirror that energy to keep the momentum going. This doesn't mean copying them. It means showing that you're tuned in to where they are emotionally. You also have to consider culture and background. Words carry different meanings in different places. What sounds direct in one culture may feel rude in another. Matching your words means being aware of who you're speaking to, what experiences they bring, and what will help your message land in a positive way. This skill isn't built overnight. You develop it by being intentional. In every conversation, start by asking yourself, who am I speaking to? What matters to them right now? What kind of language will make this conversation productive? You're not changing who you are. You're adjusting your approach so that your message doesn't get lost in translation between your mind and theirs. It's also worth noting that adjusting your words makes you a more persuasive communicator. People are more likely to agree with you when they feel you're speaking their language, literally and figuratively. They are more likely to trust you when they feel you understand them. They are more likely to follow your advice when it feels relevant to their world, not just yours. The opposite is also true. If you ignore this skill, you may cause misunderstandings without meaning to. You may come across as unprepared or disconnected. Even if your point is valid, it can be rejected because the delivery didn't match the person. Communication is not just about being right, it's about making your message easy for the other person to accept. One of the most powerful aspects of adjusting your words is that it makes conversations smoother. There's less friction, less resistance, and fewer arguments. When people feel understood, they're less defensive, they're more open to discussion, even if they don't agree with you. This is why skilled negotiators and leaders practice this constantly. They know it's not manipulation, it's alignment. If you want to sharpen this skill, start paying attention to how people respond to you. Notice when their body language changes in a good way. Notice when they seem more engaged. That's feedback, telling you your words are matching their style. Also notice when they start to withdraw or give short responses. That's feedback telling you you've missed alignment and need to adjust. The faster you catch this, the stronger your communication becomes. Adjusting your words to match another person is not about losing your authenticity. It's about expressing yourself in a way that the other person can receive without unnecessary barriers. If your intention is to make an impact, then you must focus on what works for them, not just what feels natural to you. Over time, this becomes second nature, and you won't have to think about it so much. It will simply be part of how you communicate. When you master this, you'll notice people open up to you more. They'll share more information. They'll be more willing to work with you. They'll remember conversations with you as productive and positive. That's because you didn't just talk. You connected. And connection is what makes communication powerful. Every conversation is an exchange, and the value of that exchange depends on how well the message fits the person receiving it. If you take responsibility for adjusting your words so they match the other person, you will see less misunderstanding, more trust, and more influence in every area of your life. The people who can do this consistently are the ones who lead, inspire, and leave a lasting impression. And that's the kind of communicator worth becoming.
Chapter 3. Slow down your talking when you see confusion appear. When you're speaking to someone and you see that flash of uncertainty in their eyes, that slight tilt of the head, or that pause before they respond, it's a signal you cannot ignore. Confusion is not always loud. It rarely announces itself with words. Most of the time, it's subtle. A small change in expression, a hesitation, a shift in body language. If you miss these signs and keep going at the same speed, you risk losing them entirely. The message you've worked so hard to share might never reach them the way you intended. That's why when you see confusion appear, the smartest move you can make is to slow down. Slowing down isn't about talking as if the other person can't keep up. It's about creating space for understanding. It's about giving them the mental room to absorb what you've said and process it in a way that makes sense to them. Communication is not a race. The goal isn't to get to the end of your sentence as quickly as possible. The goal is for the other person to understand and retain what you mean. If that means taking your time, you take your time. In the middle of a conversation, people can get lost for many reasons. Maybe they missed a key word you said. Maybe the topic is new to them. Maybe they're thinking about how what you said connects to their own experience, or maybe something about your explanation moved too quickly for them to keep track. If you keep moving at your normal pace, you leave them behind, and once they're left behind, they'll often stop trying to follow altogether. That's when you lose the connection. When you notice signs of confusion, the most effective action is to pause briefly and then slow your delivery. This pause signals to the listener that you're paying attention to them, not just yourself. It also gives you a chance to choose your next words more carefully, so they bridge the gap between where they are and where you are in the conversation. This is not only respectful, it's strategic. It keeps the communication alive. The act of slowing down serves another purpose. It gives you time to check if you've been clear so far. You can restate an important point in simpler terms. You can give an example. You can ask a short question to see if they're with you. These small adjustments done at a slower pace give them the opportunity to catch up without feeling overwhelmed or embarrassed. One mistake many people make is believing that speaking faster makes them sound more confident. While speed can sometimes show energy, it can also signal that you're more focused on your own delivery than on the listener's understanding. True confidence shows in your ability to control the pace to match the needs of the person you're speaking to. It shows in your willingness to slow down, repeat, or reframe something without losing patience. In professional situations, this skill can make the difference between success and failure. Imagine you're explaining a process to a new team member. You notice their expression tighten just slightly. If you rush ahead, they'll be nodding without comprehension, and when it's time for them to take action, mistakes will happen. But if you slow down in that moment, repeat the key point, and confirm they understand before moving on, you save time, prevent errors, and build trust. In personal conversations, slowing down when confusion appears shows empathy. It shows that you're not just trying to get your words out, but that you care about how those words are received. People remember when they feel heard and understood. They remember when someone took the time to make sure they were on the same page. Slowing down also changes the emotional tone of the conversation. It removes pressure. When someone is confused, they can feel stressed or anxious about keeping up. That anxiety makes it even harder for them to understand. By slowing your pace, you remove that pressure and make it easier for them to focus on the content rather than the speed. This approach also benefits you as a speaker. It forces you to think more carefully about what you're saying. It allows you to notice if you're using language that's too complex or moving through ideas in a way that's not logical to the listener. When you take your time, you're more likely to explain in a way that's clear and complete. The key is to slow down naturally. You don't want the change in pace to feel awkward or forced. You want it to feel like a smooth adjustment in the flow of conversation. Sometimes that's as simple as lowering your voice slightly, speaking in shorter sentences, and pausing more often between points. Those pauses give the listener's mind a chance to catch up, and they give you the opportunity to watch for their reaction. There's also a leadership aspect to this. Leaders who communicate well understand that their role is not just to give information, but to ensure that information is understood and actionable. If you're leading a meeting or presenting an idea, it's not enough for you to say. You have to make sure the people in the room walk away with the same understanding you intended. That's why the most effective leaders are comfortable adjusting their pace the moment they notice any sign of confusion. You can build this habit by practicing awareness in every conversation. Make it a rule to check in visually as you talk. Watch for micro-expressions, slight changes in body posture, or shifts in breathing. These are all signs that the other person's mind is either locked in with you or drifting away. If you notice uncertainty, slow down immediately. Sometimes slowing down means breaking your point into smaller pieces. Instead of delivering three connected ideas in one long statement, you deliver one, check for understanding, then move to the next. This makes the conversation easier to follow and gives the other person confidence that they're keeping up. You might also find it helpful to use confirmation questions during these slower moments. Simple questions like, "Does that make sense so far?" or "Should I explain that part again?" can make the listener feel included in the process rather than left behind. It also gives them permission to admit when they're unclear, without feeling judged. The ability to slow down is not just about verbal pacing, it's about mental pacing. It's about slowing your own thinking enough to prioritize understanding over completion. You're not just trying to get through your point, you're trying to land it in the other person's mind. That requires patience, presence, and a genuine desire for them to leave the conversation with clarity. The irony is that when you slow down at the right moments, you actually save time in the long run. Misunderstandings lead to repeated explanations, corrections, and even conflict. Taking a little extra time up front prevents those issues later. Slowing down also sends a subtle message about your character. It shows you're confident enough not to rush. It shows you value the other person enough to adjust your approach for their benefit. It shows you're more interested in the result of the conversation than in simply expressing yourself. These are qualities people remember, and they strengthen your reputation as someone worth listening to. In situations where stakes are high, closing a deal, making a pitch, delivering critical instructions, this skill can be the difference between winning and losing. If the listener feels lost during a key part of your message, everything else you say afterward is weakened. But if you slow down, re-establish clarity, and make sure they're with you, you keep your influence intact from start to finish. It's also important to remember that slowing down is not the same as dragging a conversation. You still need to keep it engaging. The goal is to make your pace match the listener's ability to process, not to stretch the conversation unnecessarily. You want every second you spend speaking to move them closer to understanding, not further away. When you become skilled at this, you'll notice something powerful. People will start asking for your opinion more often. They'll see you as someone who explains things in a way they can truly grasp. They'll feel comfortable coming to you with questions, because they know you won't rush them or make them feel inadequate. In every interaction, your job is to guide the other person toward understanding. When confusion appears, your ability to slow down is your most effective tool. It's a sign of professionalism, empathy, and self-awareness. It's also one of the simplest ways to make your communication more powerful. If you practice this every day at work, with friends, in your family, you will notice conversations becoming more productive. You'll notice fewer repeated explanations. You'll notice people following through on what you've discussed because they understood it the first time. That's the reward for taking the time to slow down when it matters most. The next time you see even the smallest sign of confusion, resist the urge to keep moving forward. Stop for a moment, lower your pace. Give them room to catch up. Make sure they're with you before you continue. That's not just good communication, it's respect. And respect is what makes people listen to you again and again.
Chapter 4. Look at people long enough to feel their mood. When you're speaking to someone, the words you hear and the words you say are only part of the conversation. The rest is happening in the silence, in the way their eyes move, in the way their body shifts, and in the subtle changes in their face. That's why looking at people long enough to feel their mood is one of the most valuable skills you can develop in communication. Too many people look without truly seeing. They glance just long enough to make contact, then turn away before they've picked up anything meaningful. If you want to connect deeply and speak smart, you need to give yourself enough time to really read the person in front of you. Feeling someone's mood is not about guessing. It's about observing until you can sense where they are emotionally and mentally. That awareness changes everything about how you respond. You'll choose different words, a different tone, even a different pace when you understand the state they're in. This makes your message easier for them to receive, because it's delivered in a way that fits their present condition. When you only glance at someone quickly, you might catch the surface whether they're smiling or not, whether they're making eye contact or looking away. But if you hold your attention for just a little longer, you start to notice the details that reveal more. Are their eyes alert or tired? Is their smile genuine or forced? Are their shoulders relaxed or tense? Is their breathing steady or shallow? These small details can tell you whether they're open, stressed, distracted, or even uninterested, and the better you can read this, the more effective your communication becomes. This kind of observation requires patience. You can't rush. You have to slow yourself down enough to actually be present. Many people listen while thinking about their next point, so they miss what's happening right in front of them. If you train yourself to stay focused on the other person for just a little longer than is comfortable, you'll pick up on changes in mood that others completely overlook. One of the most powerful benefits of reading someone's mood is that it allows you to avoid unnecessary conflict. If you sense irritation before it's expressed in words,
you can soften your tone or reframe your point in a calmer way. If you feel excitement, you can mirror that energy to keep the momentum going. If you detect hesitation, you can slow down and give them space to express their concern. Without this awareness, you might push forward in a way that makes the conversation harder than it needs to be. It's not just about avoiding problems, it's also about building connection. People feel valued when they sense you are tuned into them. They notice when you pause and really look at them as they speak. They notice when you respond to their mood rather than just their words. This makes them more open, more trusting, and more willing to engage with you fully. Feeling someone's mood also helps you understand what they're not saying. Sometimes the most important part of a conversation is hidden between the lines. Someone might tell you they're fine, but if you look long enough, you see the tension in their jaw or the drop in their energy. They might say they agree, but their eyes reveal uncertainty. These moments give you the chance to address what's really going on instead of accepting the surface answer. To develop this skill, you have to remove distractions. If you're checking your phone, glancing around the room, or thinking about your next meeting, you won't notice the subtle sign. Being present is not just a polite habit, it's a strategic advantage. It allows you to catch things in real time and respond in a way that moves the conversation in the right direction. There's a difference between staring and truly looking. Staring can make people uncomfortable, especially if it feels like you're trying to dominate or challenge them. Truly looking is different. It's relaxed, engaged, and respectful. It's about being interested, not intent. The goal is to give them your attention in a way that feels natural, but long enough for you to read their emotional state. The length of time you need to look will depend on the situation. In a fast-moving exchange, a few seconds of focused attention might be enough. In a deeper conversation, you might maintain consistent eye contact while they speak, occasionally glancing away so it feels natural. The point is to stay present long enough to read them, not to rush through the interaction. When you can feel someone's mood, your communication becomes far more adaptive. If you notice they're restless, you keep your points concise. If you sense they're deeply engaged, you can expand on your ideas. If you detect frustration, you can acknowledge it and address it before moving on. This ability to adjust based on real-time feedback makes you far more effective in both personal and professional situations. One of the best places to practice is in everyday conversation. When you're talking to a friend, hold your attention on them long enough to notice their breathing, their expressions, and their body position. When you're in a meeting, watch how someone reacts as others speak. When you're meeting someone for the first time, take an extra moment before speaking to notice their initial mood. The more you practice, the more natural it becomes. Feeling someone's mood is also about noticing changes during the conversation. People's emotional states aren't fixed. They shift as the discussion progresses. They might start out guarded, but become more open. They might begin relaxed, but tense up when a certain subject comes up. If you're paying attention, you can adjust in real time to keep the conversation on track. This is a skill that separates average communicators from great ones. Average communicators focus only on the words. Great communicators focus on the whole person. They listen with their eyes as much as their ears. They respond not just to what's said, but to how it's said and to the feelings behind it. In leadership, this skill is priceless. A leader who can feel the mood of their team, can sense when motivation is dropping, when tension is rising, and when enthusiasm is building. They can address issues before they become problems and capitalize on positive energy when it's present. They can have difficult conversations in a way that keeps respect intact because they're aware of how people are receiving their words. In personal relationships, this skill builds closeness. When your partner, friend, or family member feels that you really see them, not just hear them, they're more likely to share openly. They're more likely to trust you with their true thoughts and feelings. This kind of connection strengthens bonds and reduces misunderstanding. To master this skill, you have to practice active stillness. That means being fully engaged, without rushing to fill silence or push the conversation forward. It means allowing yourself to stay in that moment long enough for the truth of the other person's mood to come through. It's not always comfortable, but that's why it's rare and valuable. You'll also need to be careful not to make quick judgments. Sometimes what looks like frustration is actually concentration. What looks like boredom might be exhaustion from something unrelated to your conversation. That's why you look long enough to go beyond your first impression and get a more accurate sense of their state. Once you feel their mood, the next step is to use that awareness wisely. If they seem open, take the opportunity to go deeper into the conversation. If they seem closed off, consider easing into the topic or giving them space. If they seem uncertain, provide reassurance or ask clarifying questions. This is how you make your communication more effective. You respond to reality, not assumption. With time and practice, you'll find that reading people's moods becomes second nature. You won't have to think about it. It will simply be part of how you interact. You'll walk into a room and immediately sense the energy. You'll meet someone new and quickly understand if they're relaxed, cautious, or eager. You'll be able to shift your words, tone, and approach in a way that makes your message more impactful. The truth is, most people go through life with very little awareness of others, beyond the obvious. They miss opportunities to connect because they don't take the extra moment to really see the person in front of them. But when you train yourself to look long enough to feel someone's mood, you put yourself in a position to communicate on a level most people never reach. This is not just about being liked. It's about being effective. It's about delivering your message in a way that sticks because it's tailored to the moment, to the person, and to their emotional state. It's about creating conversations that are not just exchanges of words, but exchanges of understanding. And that's the kind of communication that changes relationships, influences decisions, and leaves a lasting impression.
Chapter 5. Match your energy level to the tone of the talk. Every conversation has a tone, and that tone sets the rhythm for how the exchange will unfold. Some talks are filled with urgency, others with calm reflection. Some are heavy with seriousness, while others are light and casual. If your energy doesn't match the tone of the talk, you create friction that makes understanding harder. But when you align your energy with the atmosphere of the conversation, everything flows more smoothly. People feel you're in sync with them, and that alignment makes your words more effective. Matching your energy is not about pretending to feel something you don't. It's about being aware enough to adjust how you present yourself so that your message is received in the best way possible. Communication isn't just about the words you choose. It's about the volume of your voice, the speed of your delivery, your facial expressions, and the physical presence you bring to the moment. All of these elements carry energy, and that energy can either support or undermine your message. If you walk into a conversation with high excitement when the other person is dealing with something serious, your energy will feel out of place. It can make them think you're not taking the matter seriously, even if you are. On the other hand, if you respond to good news with low, flat energy, it can feel like you're uninterested or even dismissive. This mismatch can lead to misunderstandings and weaken the trust between you and the other person. Matching energy starts with awareness. The first thing you do when you join a conversation is to take a moment to observe. Listen to the tone of the other person's voice. Notice the pace at which they're speaking. Watch their facial expressions. Pay attention to how animated they are with their body language. These clues tell you where their energy level is. Once you sense it, you adjust your own energy so you're not pushing the conversation in a direction that feels unnatural. When you match energy, you create comfort. People are more likely to open up when they feel the person they're talking to is moving at the same emotional pace they are. It shows you're present, you're tuned in, and you're making an effort to be part of the same moment they're in. That builds rapport faster than any clever sentence could. Think about professional situations. In a brainstorming session, the tone might be lively and quick-moving.
Ideas are being thrown around, and energy is high. In that environment, speaking with slow, low energy can cause people to overlook your contribution. To be heard, you'd want to raise your energy to match the room. But if you're in a meeting where people are discussing a sensitive issue, you'd do the opposite. You'd lower your energy to match the seriousness of the topic, showing respect for the mood in the room. Personal relationships work the same way. If your friend is sharing exciting news about an achievement, they're looking for your energy to meet theirs. They want you to share in the joy and enthusiasm. If they're telling you about a challenge or loss, they're looking for your energy to be steady, calm, and understanding. When you respond in a way that matches their emotional state, you make them feel understood on a deeper level. Matching energy also helps you manage tension. If someone comes at you with high frustration or anger, meeting them with the same intensity will likely escalate the situation. In that case, matching energy doesn't mean mirroring the exact emotion. It means matching the level of engagement while balancing the tone to keep things constructive. You can speak firmly and clearly without matching their anger, which helps de-escalate instead of inflame. There's a balance to strike here. Matching energy doesn't mean you lose yourself or abandon your natural style. It's not about mimicking the other person, it's about meeting them where they are, and then guiding the conversation in a direction that serves both of you. This is an active, intentional choice. You're deciding how to show up in a way that maximizes connection and understanding. You can practice this skill in everyday interactions. When someone approaches you at work, before you respond, notice their energy. Are they talking fast or slow? Are they leaning in or standing back? Do they seem focused or distracted? Then respond in a way that lines up with what you're seeing. This might mean adjusting your tone, your pace, your body language, or even the amount of movement in your gestures. Over time, this becomes second nature, and people will describe you as easy to talk to because you always seem to get them. Another benefit of matching energy is that it makes your influence stronger. When people feel you're in sync with them, they're more likely to accept your ideas. They're more willing to listen because you've created a sense of familiarity and trust. This is especially valuable in leadership, sales, negotiations, and any role where persuasion is important. You're not forcing your way in, you're aligning yourself with where the other person already is, and then moving forward together. It's worth noting that this skill also applies in group situations. Every group has its own energy. A team meeting can feel different from a social gathering, and both will differ from a crisis discussion. If you bring energy that's too high in a calm group, you stand out in a way that can be distracting. If you bring energy that's too low in a lively group, you risk being overlooked. Reading the room and adjusting accordingly allows you to be part of the flow rather than fighting against. The challenge for many people is that they stay locked in their own energy without considering how it affects the other person. They bring whatever mood they're in to the conversation and expect others to adapt. This can work sometimes, but more often it creates distance. The more adaptable you are, the more people will feel comfortable around you because you're not forcing them to adjust to you, you're meeting them halfway. Matching energy also communicates respect. It says, I'm paying attention to you. I value this conversation enough to be fully present in it. That simple act can change the tone of an interaction instantly. It can take a conversation from awkward to engaging, from tense to calm, from distant to connect. There are times when you might intentionally shift the energy once you've matched it. For example, if someone is nervous before a big presentation, you might start by matching their energy, keeping your tone quiet and measured, then slowly raising it to encourage confidence. If someone is overly worked up, you might begin at their level and gradually bring your energy down to help them calm. This works because people are more likely to follow your lead once they feel you're aligned with them. Your physical presence is a big part of this. Energy isn't just in your voice, it's in your posture, your expressions, and your movement. If someone is speaking slowly and thoughtfully, but you're shifting constantly and fidgeting, your physical energy is mismatched even if your words are fine. Consistency between your verbal and nonverbal energy makes the connection stronger. Matching your energy to the tone of the talk is ultimately about connection. It's about making the person you're speaking to feel like you're walking alongside them, rather than pulling them ahead or dragging them behind. It's about creating a rhythm in conversation that feels natural, comfortable, and productive for both sides. If you focus on developing this skill, you'll find that your conversations become smoother. People will open up more quickly, disagreements will resolve faster, and you'll be able to guide discussions toward better outcomes. You'll become someone people trust to handle conversations with care, whether the mood is light, heavy, urgent, or reflective. In every interaction, ask yourself, what's the tone here? What's the emotional pace? How can I bring myself into alignment with it? The answers to those questions will guide your energy so that your words, tone, and presence all work together to create communication that feels effortless and natural. And when conversations feel effortless, they leave a lasting impact.
Chapter 6. Remove words that make your point sound weaker. When you speak, every word you use either strengthens your point or weakens it. Most people don't realize how often they dilute the power of what they're saying simply by adding unnecessary words. These extra words might feel harmless, but they can make your message sound uncertain, hesitant, or less important than it really is. If you want to speak smart and have people take your words seriously, you have to remove anything that doesn't serve your main point. Strong communication is about clarity and precision, not about filling space with more language. Weakening words show up in many forms. Sometimes they are filler phrases like, I think, maybe, kind of, sort of, or probably. Other times they are apologetic openings like, I'm not sure but, or this might be a bad idea but. These words plant doubt in the listener's mind before you've even made your point. They make it sound like you don't fully believe what you're saying, so why should anyone else believe it? Another way words weaken a message is through unnecessary repetition. When you repeat yourself too many times without adding value, it can make your message feel padded rather than powerful. People stop focusing on the strength of your point and start noticing the fluff around it. Over time, this habit can make you sound less confident and less authoritative, even if you know what you're talking about. If you've ever listened to a great communicator, you'll notice something. They get to the point without rushing, but without wasting time either. They know exactly what they want to say, and they say it in a way that's direct, yet respectful. They don't over-explain unless it's needed for clarity, and they don't load their sentences with qualifiers that make them sound unsure. Their words are clean, sharp, and intentional. That's not an accident, it's a skill they've built. To strengthen your communication, you have to develop an awareness of the words you choose. That starts with listening to yourself. Pay attention to how you speak in meetings, presentations, and everyday conversations. Notice when you use phrases that don't add meaning. You might not realize how often you say, basically, actually, or you know. These words don't always damage a conversation, but when they become habits, they distract from your message and make it less compelling. You also have to be mindful of over-explaining. Explaining something thoroughly is not the same as explaining it three different ways, when one clear explanation would have been enough. Over-explaining can signal to the listener that you're trying to convince yourself as much as you're trying to convince them. It can also make you lose their attention. Once someone tunes out, it's hard to get them back. A good exercise is to imagine that every word you say costs you something valuable. If you had to pay for each word, you'd choose them more carefully. You'd avoid clutter, and you'd focus on what delivers the most impact. This mindset forces you to value the listener's time and attention, which is one of the marks of a strong communicator. It's not just about removing filler, it's also about removing uncertainty from your delivery. If you're confident in your point, state it directly.
Instead of saying, I think this could work, say, this will work because, instead of maybe we should try this, because, direct language doesn't mean you're being aggressive, it means you're showing that you've thought through your point and you're willing to stand behind it. Of course, there are situations where softening your words can be useful, especially when delivering sensitive feedback or navigating tense situations. But even in those cases, you can choose words that are clear without being blunt to the point of offense. For example, instead of saying, this might sound stupid, but you could say, I have a different perspective I'd like to share. You're still softening the entry, but you're doing it in a way that doesn't make your idea sound weak before you've even shared it. Another way to make your point stronger is to avoid vague language. Words like some, a few, maybe, and probably can be useful in casual talk, but when you're making a point that matters, they can leave too much room for interpretation. If you can be specific. Instead of saying, some people might be interested in this, say, our customers will be interested in this because precision builds credibility. When you remove words that weaken your point, you also give more weight to the words you keep. The listener doesn't have to sift through extra language to understand you. They hear the message clearly, and they can focus on the meaning rather than on decoding what you're trying to say. This makes your communication more memorable and more persuasive. This skill also applies to writing, but in spoken communication, it's even more important because you don't have the chance to edit after the fact. Once words are spoken, they're out there. That's why practicing concise, powerful speech in daily life will prepare you for moments when it matters most. Whether you're answering a question in a meeting, making a case for an idea, or speaking to an audience, the ability to strip away anything that weakens your message will give you a clear advantage. A practical approach is to pause briefly before speaking. In that pause, ask yourself, what is the core point I want to make? Which words will deliver that point most effectively? This short moment of thought can save you from filling the air with weak language. Over time, your brain learns to form stronger sentences naturally, without as much conscious effort. Listening to great speakers can also help you refine this skill. Pay attention to how they open their statements, how they transition between points, and how they end with a strong close. Notice how they rarely use words that signal doubt unless it's intentional for strategy. Emulate their discipline in keeping their words purposeful. This doesn't mean you have to speak like a robot. Natural conversation has flow and personality, and sometimes filler words are part of building rapport. The goal isn't to strip your speech of all casual elements, it's to make sure that when it's time to be clear, you can be clear without anything getting in the way. There's another benefit to removing weak words. It makes you sound more credible under pressure. In high-stakes situations, interviews, negotiations, debates, people listen not just to what you say, but how you say it. If you fill your answers with uncertainty markers, they'll sense hesitation. But if you state your point directly, they'll sense assurance. Even if they don't agree with you, they'll respect the way you presented yourself. Over time, people will start associating you with clarity and directness. They'll know that when you speak, you're worth listening to, because you don't waste time and you don't cloud your message. This reputation is incredibly valuable, both professionally and personally. It opens doors, earns trust, and makes people more likely to seek your input. Removing words that weaken your point is a habit you build through awareness, practice, and self-discipline. It requires catching yourself when you're about to add a phrase that doesn't serve your goal. It requires reviewing your conversations afterward and asking, "Could I have said that in fewer, stronger words?" Every time you refine your language, you sharpen your communication. The real test of this skill is when you have to deliver important messages on the spot. In those moments, you won't have time to think through every sentence. That's when your training in choosing strong, direct language will show. You'll speak with confidence, your point will land, and the conversation will move forward without confusion. The world is full of noise. People are overloaded with information every day. If you want your voice to cut through that noise, you can't afford to weaken your message with unnecessary words. Every sentence should earn its place. Every word should have a reason to be there. That discipline will make you stand out in every room you enter. If you commit to this, you'll notice people responding differently to you. They'll take your contributions more seriously, they'll remember what you said more clearly, and you'll find that your influence grows, not because you're speaking more often, but because you're speaking with more strength each time. That is the real power of removing words that make your point sound weaker.
Chapter 7. Check if the listener is following before moving on. A conversation is only successful if both people stay on the same page. It doesn't matter how much effort you put into explaining your point, if the other person is no longer with you halfway through. Too many people make the mistake of talking straight through without pausing to see if the listener is still engaged, still understanding, and still processing the information. Communication is not about delivering your message in one uninterrupted stream, it's about creating a shared understanding as you go. That's why you have to check if the listener is following before you move on. When you take the time to confirm understanding, you prevent confusion from building. Small misunderstandings caught early can be fixed quickly. But if you keep moving without checking, those small gaps turn into bigger problems. The person might nod politely while feeling lost, and you might assume they're keeping up. By the time you finish, they could be completely disconnected from what you meant. That's when mistakes happen, instructions get misinterpreted, and trust starts to erode. Checking for understanding is not about doubting the other person's intelligence, it's about respecting their perspective and pace. People process information differently. Some grasp new concepts quickly, others need a little more time. Some prefer to hear all the details before asking questions. Others like to clarify as they go. If you assume everyone processes like you do, you'll miss opportunities to ensure your message is landing the way you intended. The signs that someone isn't following are often subtle. You might notice their eyes drift for a second, their facial expression tighten, or their head tilt slightly as if they're trying to catch up. They might stop making small verbal acknowledgements like yes or I see. Their body language might shift from open to closed. These are signals that the connection between your words and their understanding is weakening. When you notice these signs, you have a choice: keep talking and hope they catch up, or pause and check in. The second option always leads to better communication. A simple direct question like, "Is this making sense so far?" or "Do you agree with where we're at right now?" invites the listener to be part of the process. It tells them you're not just there to talk, you're there to ensure you both understand each other. Sometimes the best way to check understanding is to ask them to share their view of what you just said. This doesn't have to be formal. You might say, "How would you approach this based on what we've covered?" or "What's your take on this step?" Their answer will show you instantly whether they're aligned with your meaning or if something needs clarification. Checking in also helps the listener feel respected. It shows you value their perspective enough to stop and make sure they're not just hearing you, but actually understanding. It creates a two-way conversation instead of a one-sided lecture. This is especially important in situations where the outcome depends on mutual clarity, such as in planning, problem solving, or negotiation. In group settings, checking if the audience is following is even more critical. People may not speak up if they're lost, especially in larger groups where they don't want to interrupt. That's why it's important to break your points into sections and pause to ask for questions or feedback. Even a brief "Does this match your experience?" can bring people back into the discussion and uncover areas where they need more clarity. In fast-paced conversations, it's easy to assume that if the listener isn't interrupting, they're following along. But silence doesn't always mean agreement or understanding. It can mean hesitation, confusion, or even disagreement they're not ready to express. By actively checking in,
You create space for them to voice any uncertainty before it becomes a bigger issue. This habit also builds trust over time. People remember when you take the extra moment to make sure they're with you. They'll feel more confident working with you because they know you won't just leave them behind. They'll see you as someone who communicates with precision and care, which makes them more open to your ideas in the future. There's a practical side to this as well. In business, unchecked misunderstandings can cost time, money, and relationships. A project might stall because team members interpreted instructions differently. A client might feel frustrated if they thought they agreed to one thing but got another. A simple check-in during the conversation could have prevented all of that. In personal relationships, failing to confirm understanding can lead to unnecessary conflict. You might think you've agreed on something, only to find out later that the other person had a completely different interpretation. Taking a moment to confirm what's been understood helps prevent these avoidable tensions and keeps relationships strong. You can make checking for understanding a natural part of your style by keeping it conversational. Avoid making it feel like a test. Instead, weave it into the flow of discussion. Use tone and body language that invite openness. If you ask someone if they're following in a way that feels judgmental, they may pretend they are even if they're not. But if you ask in a way that feels collaborative, they're more likely to be honest. One powerful approach is to combine observation with question. Watch for nonverbal signs of confusion. Then use an open-ended question to explore their perspective. For example, I noticed you looked unsure when I mentioned that step. What's your take on it? This both acknowledges their reaction and gives them a chance to clarify without embarrassment. It's also useful to check for understanding at key points in the conversation rather than only at the end. Waiting until the conclusion to find out someone hasn't been following means you might have to go back and redo large sections. Breaking the conversation into smaller parts and confirming after each makes the whole process smoother and more effective. This approach also creates a rhythm that keeps people engaged. They know you're going to pause and involve them, so they stay alert and ready to contribute. It transforms the conversation from something they passively receive into something they actively participate in. Checking if the listener is following isn't just about making sure they understand, it's about making sure they care. When people feel included in the process, they're more invested in the outcome. They don't just understand the message, they take ownership of it. Over time, this habit makes you a more reliable communicator. People know that when you're involved in a discussion, the end result will be clear and agreed upon by everyone. They'll trust that you won't rush ahead for the sake of finishing. You'll make sure the foundation of understanding is solid before moving forward. Even in situations where time is limited, this step can save you from having to repeat yourself later. A quick confirmation now can prevent a long explanation later. It's an investment in efficiency as much as it is in clarity. The best communicators don't just talk, they make sure their words land. They don't assume that silence means understanding. They take the time to confirm, clarify, and adjust as needed. That's what makes their conversations productive, their relationships stronger, and their influence more lasting. If you want to improve how people respond to you, make this a non-negotiable habit. Before you move on to the next point, stop and ask yourself, do I know for sure they're with me right now? If the answer is anything less than certain, take a moment to check. That moment can be the difference between being heard and being truly understood.
Chapter 8. Hold your ground when someone tries to control you. There will be moments in your life when someone will try to push you into a corner, steer the conversation their way, or make you agree to something that doesn't feel right. They may try to dominate through their words, tone, or presence. If you give in too easily in those moments, you risk losing not only the conversation but also your self-respect. Holding your ground when someone tries to control you is not about being aggressive or confrontational.
It's about standing firm in your values, your beliefs, and your decisions, while still communicating with clarity and composure. When someone tries to take control, they often rely on pressure. That pressure might be subtle, such as interrupting you repeatedly, speaking over you, or dismissing your points. It can also be direct, like demanding you agree, using guilt, or making you feel as though you don't have another option. If you're not ready for it, you might find yourself agreeing just to end the tension. But that short-term relief comes with long-term consequences, because you've just shown them that pushing hard enough will make you back down. Holding your ground starts with being clear on what you believe and what you want before the conversation begins. If you don't have clarity, it's easy for someone else's certainty to overpower you. Knowing your stance gives you something solid to return to whenever the discussion gets heated or the other person tries to throw you off track. You're not scrambling for what to say. You're anchored. Your tone is one of your most powerful tools in these moments. If your voice becomes shaky, rushed, or overly soft, it can give the impression that you're unsure, even if you're not. Speaking at a steady pace, with a calm but firm tone, shows that you're confident in your position. People often match the energy they receive. If you stay composed, you reduce the chance of the conversation turning into a battle of volume or aggression. Body language plays just as big a role. The way you sit or stand communicates as much as your word. If you shrink back, avoid eye contact, or make yourself physically smaller, it signals that you're retreating. Standing or sitting upright, keeping steady eye contact, and maintaining an open posture sends the message that you're not intimidated. Even if the other person is trying to dominate the space, you're showing through your presence that you won't be pushed aside. A key part of holding your ground is refusing to be rushed. People who try to control often push for quick decisions. Knowing that speed limits your ability to think clearly, they may say things like, "We need to decide right now," or "You have to answer immediately." If the decision truly matters, give yourself permission to slow down. You can say, "I'm not ready to commit to that yet," or "I need more time to consider this." This removes their ability to box you into a choice you might regret. Another tactic they might use is trying to control the narrative by reframing your words or twisting your meaning. If you notice this happening, correct it immediately. You can say, "That's not what I said," or "Let me clarify my point." The longer you let a false version of your position stand, the harder it becomes to pull the conversation back to accuracy. Correcting them early and directly helps you maintain control of your own message. You must also resist the urge to justify yourself endlessly. Over-explaining can give the other person more openings to challenge you and drag you into side argument. Once you've stated your point clearly, you don't have to keep defending it from every angle they present. Repeating your main point calmly but firmly is often more effective than chasing down every objection. Sometimes, holding your ground means saying no and then stopping there. Many people weaken their no by following it with a long explanation. The more you explain, the more room you give the other person to argue with your reasons. A short, clear, and respectful no, "That doesn't work for me," is often enough. If they press, you can repeat it without getting drawn into a debate. It's important to recognize the emotional tactics people might use to gain control. They might try to make you feel guilty, ashamed, or obligated. They might remind you of past favors or try to appeal to your sense of loyalty in a way that manipulates rather than respects you. Being aware of these tactics helps you see them for what they are, so you can respond logically instead of emotionally. At times, holding your ground also involves redirecting the conversation. If someone is dominating by steering the talk away from the main point, bring it back. You can say, "That's not the issue we're discussing," or "Let's focus on the main topic." This keeps you from being pulled into irrelevant territory where they can gain the upper hand. Listening is also a form of strength. Some people mistake holding your ground for never yielding an inch, but real strength includes listening fully before responding. This doesn't mean you'll change your position, but it does mean you're willing to hear them out. When you listen, you gain more information about their motives, their reasoning, and the angles they might use to influence you. It also makes you harder to manipulate, because you're responding to the actual content of their words, rather than reacting to their tone or pressure. In some situations, the best way to hold your ground is to simply stay silent after making your point. People who try to control often expect you to fill the silence by giving in or softening your stance. If you remain quiet and let the silence sit, you put the pressure back on them. They may realize that you're not going to bend just because they're waiting for you to speak. There's also value in setting boundaries before the conversation even starts. If you know someone has a history of trying to dominate, you can prepare by deciding what topics you're willing to discuss, how long you'll engage, and when you'll walk away if necessary. Boundaries are a form of self-respect, and they make it much harder for someone to pull you into a situation where you feel trapped. It's worth remembering that not every attempt at control is malicious. Sometimes people try to take charge because they're anxious, impatient, or unaware of how they're coming across. Even then, holding your ground is important, because it teaches people how to treat you. The more consistently you show that you won't be pushed into decisions or positions you don't agree with, the less likely they are to try it again. Holding your ground also earns respect from others who are watching. In professional settings, colleagues notice when someone stands firm in a discussion, without losing composure. It signals that you can handle pressure, think independently, and protect your priority. In personal life, friends and family see that you value yourself enough not to be swayed against your will. This respect can strengthen your influence over time. To master this skill, you need both inner confidence and outward control. Inner confidence comes from knowing your values, your priorities, and your non-negotiables. Outward control comes from managing your tone, body language, and pace, so that you project certainty. Together, these make you a communicator who can handle strong personalities without being overpowered. The real challenge is maintaining your stance without letting emotions drive you into unnecessary conflict. It's not about winning every argument, it's about making sure you leave the conversation with your integrity intact. You want to be able to look back and know you didn't give away your position out of fear, discomfort, or pressure. With practice, you'll reach a point where you don't fear these moments. You'll know that holding your ground is not a fight. It's simply protecting your right to think, decide, and speak for yourself. And once you reach that point, people will approach you differently. They'll know that while you're open to discussion, you cannot be forced into submission. That's the kind of presence that makes your communication not just heard, but respected.
Chapter 9. Give value in every talk, so people respect you. Every time you speak with someone, you leave an impression. That impression can raise their respect for you, or it can lower it. If you want to be a communicator people listen to, remember this simple principle. Give value in every talk. Value means they walk away from the conversation with something useful, an idea, a perspective, an answer, a solution, or even just a better feeling than before you spoke. Too many people talk to fill the air, to show they have something to say, or to get their own thoughts out. The ones who stand out are the ones who speak in a way that makes the other person feel they gain something from the interaction. Giving value starts with the mindset that the conversation is not just about you. Even if you're sharing your own opinion, the way you frame it should serve the listener. Ask yourself before speaking, will this help them think differently? Will it solve a problem? Will it make them feel more capable, informed, or confident? When you start with that mindset, you naturally choose words, examples, and stories that have purpose instead of just noise.
It's important to know that value isn't always about giving advice. Sometimes the value you give is clarity. Sometimes it's a fresh perspective they haven't considered. Sometimes it's encouragement at the exact moment they need it. Sometimes it's asking the right question that helps them see their own solution. Value comes in many forms, but it always leaves the other person better off than before they spoke to you. The opposite is also true. If you speak without giving value, you risk wasting their time. People have limited attention, and they're constantly deciding whether a conversation is worth staying in. If they feel like nothing meaningful is coming from what you're saying, their respect for you as a communicator begins to fade. Over time, they'll tune out more quickly or avoid coming to you for input. That's the cost of not giving value. To consistently bring value, you need to listen more than you speak. Listening allows you to understand what the other person actually needs, instead of assuming. If you jump in too quickly with your own thoughts, you might miss the real problem they're facing. When you take the time to hear them out, you can tailor your words so they address what's most relevant. That's when your contribution lands with real impact. Being intentional about your examples and stories is another way to add value. Random stories that don't connect to the point are just entertainment. But stories that illustrate a lesson, demonstrate a principle, or help the other person see a path forward turn into tools they can use. People remember stories that give them a takeaway. They forget the ones that are told just for the sake of talking. In professional settings, giving value might mean sharing a shortcut, a proven strategy, or a useful resource. It might mean presenting information in a way that's easy to act on. In personal relationships, it might mean offering support that's practical rather than generic, or giving an insight that helps them see a situation differently. In both cases, the key is to make sure your contribution serves the conversation, not just your ego. One of the most common ways people fail to give value is by making the conversation about themselves when it should be about the other person. This happens when someone shares a challenge, and instead of exploring their situation, the other person immediately shifts into telling their own story. While personal stories can be valuable, they should be used with the intention of helping, not just to redirect attention. The question you should always ask yourself is, how does this help them? If it doesn't, it's not value, it's self-indulgence. Giving value also builds authority. When people consistently leave conversations with you feeling more informed, more prepared, or more confident, they begin to see you as someone worth listening to. This doesn't mean you have to be an expert in everything. It means you take the time to think before you speak and contribute something that moves the discussion forward in a meaningful way. Sometimes value is about efficiency. You might give value by making a complex topic simple, by summarizing key points so everyone's clear, or by removing unnecessary details that waste time. Clarity is one of the most underrated forms of value in communication, and people will respect you for making things easier to understand. Another way to bring value is to anticipate needs. If you know what's coming next in a discussion, you can prepare something that will help before it's even asked for. In a meeting, this might mean having the right data ready. In a personal conversation, it might mean offering reassurance before doubt has the chance to grow. Anticipation shows that you're thinking beyond the moment, and that makes your presence in the conversation even more valuable. Respect is built over time. One conversation may not define how people see you, but the pattern of your conversations will. If people can count on you to make every interaction worth their time, they'll seek you out, they'll trust your input, they'll give you their attention even in a busy or distracted environment, because you've earned a reputation for bringing something worth hearing. There's also a confidence that comes with this habit. When you know you've given value, you don't need to talk excessively or overcompensate. You can be brief and still make an impact. The respect you gain isn't because you spoke the most, it's because you made your words count. You also have to understand that value is relative. What's valuable to one person might not be valuable to another. That's why knowing your audience is critical. The same piece of advice could be helpful to a beginner, but unnecessary to an expert. The same encouragement might mean a lot to someone who's struggling, but feel redundant to someone already motivated. This is why listening and paying attention to context is key. You can only give real value if you understand what matters to the person you're speaking with. One challenge in giving value is avoiding the temptation to over-deliver in a way that overwhelms the listener. Sometimes, in an effort to help, people dump too much information at once, making it hard for the other person to process. Value isn't about quantity, it's about quality. One clear, relevant, and actionable idea is often worth more than 10 scattered suggestions. Another aspect of giving value is knowing when not to speak. Silence can be valuable when it gives space for the other person to think, reflect, or share more. If you rush to fill every gap in the conversation, you might rob them of the chance to express something important. Listening fully before responding can be one of the most valuable things you do. Respect grows when people feel understood, supported, and equipped after talking to you. This requires intention in every conversation. You can't just hope value shows up, you have to create it. That might mean doing a little extra preparation before important discussions, reflecting on your past conversations to see where you could have offered more, or simply being more mindful about the words you choose. Over time, this habit changes how you see communication. You stop measuring the success of a conversation by how much you got to speak, and start measuring it by how much the other person gained. That shift makes you more effective, more respected, and more trusted. People will notice the difference even if they can't put it into words. They'll leave conversations with you feeling like it was worth their time, and that feeling will make them want to come back. The more you practice giving value, the more natural it becomes. It won't feel like an effort. You'll instinctively look for ways to make the other person's situation better, even in small ways. You'll find yourself asking better questions, offering sharper insights, and knowing when to step back so they can think. And each time you do, you strengthen your reputation as someone whose words matter. In a world where so much communication is empty or self-serving, giving value is what sets you apart. It's what turns conversations into opportunities for growth, connection, and respect. If you commit to it, you won't just be someone who talks. You'll be someone people remember, someone whose presence improves the quality of every discussion. That's the kind of communicator people trust, follow, and respect for years to come. Chapter 10. Leave the listener feeling better than when you began. Every conversation you have leaves a mark on the person you're speaking with. That mark can be positive, neutral, or negative, and the choice is yours. If you want to be the kind of communicator people remember for the right reasons, make it your mission to leave the listener feeling better than when you began. This doesn't mean you have to flatter them or avoid honesty. It means you speak in a way that lifts their mood, adds something valuable to their perspective, and leaves them feeling respected and understood. People rarely remember every word you say, but they always remember how they felt when they were with you. If your words drain them, frustrate them, or make them feel smaller, they'll carry that feeling long after the conversation is over. But if your words energize them, encourage them, or give them a sense of clarity, they'll carry that too, and they'll associate that feeling with you. Leaving someone better than you found them starts with intention. You have to enter a conversation thinking about the outcome for them, not just for yourself. Ask yourself, what do I want this person to take away emotionally, as well as mentally? Maybe you want them to feel confident about a decision, more hopeful about their situation, or simply appreciated for their efforts. That clarity guides how you choose your tone, your pace, and your words. This principle doesn't mean you avoid hard truths. Sometimes the most respectful and uplifting thing you can do is to be honest, even when it's not easy to hear. The difference lies in how you deliver it. If you're giving critical feedback, you can do it in a way that focuses on solutions and improvement rather than only pointing out problems. If you're delivering bad news, you can still leave them with a sense of dignity and reassurance that they can handle what's ahead. One way to leave people feeling better is to make them feel heard. Too many conversations are one-sided, where one person speaks and the other waits for their turn to talk. When you genuinely listen, respond to their points, and show that you've understood them, you give them something rare. The experience of being truly acknowledged. That alone can change how they feel by the end of the talk. Your tone plays a huge role here. Even neutral information can feel uplifting if your tone is warm, calm, and encouraging. Conversely, even good news can lose its impact if it's delivered with disinterest or irritation. People respond not only to the content of your words, but to the emotional energy behind them. If you want them to walk away feeling better, your tone should reflect care and respect from start to finish. Another powerful way to leave a positive impact is to offer a genuine compliment or recognition when it's deserved. This doesn't mean forced praise, it means noticing something real and pointing it out. Maybe they handled a situation well, showed persistence, or shared a thoughtful idea. Mentioning it can reinforce their strengths and leave them with a boost of confidence that carries beyond your conversation. Empathy is also essential. When someone is sharing a struggle, rushing to give advice without acknowledging their feelings can make them feel brushed aside. Sometimes the best way to leave them better is to validate their emotions and let them know they're not alone in what they're going through. That connection can be more valuable than any piece of advice you could give. Even in brief interactions, you can practice this principle. A short meeting, a quick phone call, or a casual exchange can still leave someone feeling more positive than before. It might be a small piece of encouragement, a helpful suggestion, or simply showing appreciation for their time. These moments add up, and over time, they define your reputation as someone whose presence is uplifting. In tense situations, leaving someone better than you found them often means managing your own emotions first. If you enter a discussion, frustrated, anxious, or impatient, that energy will influence the conversation. Taking a moment to center yourself before speaking can prevent your mood from lowering theirs. Instead, you can set the tone for a calmer, more productive exchange. This principle also applies when you disagree with someone. Disagreements don't have to leave people feeling attacked or diminished. You can express your different perspective while still respecting theirs. By focusing on shared goals or acknowledging the valid points they've made, you can end the conversation with mutual respect intact. They may not agree with you, but they can still walk away feeling valued. One thing that weakens this habit is focusing only on what you want to get out of the conversation. If you treat interactions purely as transactions, you might get the information or decision you need, but you miss the opportunity to build goodwill. When you aim to leave them better, you're investing in a long-term relationship, not just a short-term result. That investment pays off over time, as people become more open, cooperative, and trusting with you. Leaving someone better than you found them doesn't have to be dramatic. Often, it's the subtle things that make the difference. The way you listen without interrupting, the way you acknowledge their efforts, the way you thank them for their time, or the way you help them see a challenge from a new angle. These details may seem small, but they shape how the other person feels about both the conversation and about you. It's also worth remembering that everyone is carrying something you can't see. Your conversation might be the only moment in their day when someone treats them with patience, kindness, or genuine interest. That moment can lift them in ways you might never fully realize. This is why being intentional about the effect you leave on people matters. It might mean more to them than you know. A practical way to practice this is to end conversations with something constructive. If you've been discussing a problem, close with a clear next step or an encouraging remark about progress. If you've been talking about an idea, wrap it up with excitement about the possibility ahead. Even if the topic is difficult, this ending leaves them with a sense of direction, instead of a feeling of uncertainty. In professional life, this approach can set you apart. Clients, colleagues, and partners will remember that interactions with you tend to end on a productive, positive note. They'll want to work with you because your presence makes the process easier, not harder. In personal life, it builds stronger, more resilient relationships because people feel good about coming to you, even in challenging times. Of course, this habit takes awareness. In the middle of a busy day, it's easy to rush through conversations without thinking about how you're leaving the other person. Building the habit means making a conscious choice in each interaction to ask yourself, how can I leave them better than I found them? That question shifts your focus from just getting through the talk to actually improving the other person's state. Over time, this way of communicating becomes part of who you are. People start to expect that after speaking with you, they'll feel clearer, more motivated, or more understood. That expectation becomes part of your influence, because they'll seek you out when they need a lift or a steady voice. The long-term impact of this is powerful. You not only build a network of people who respect you, but you also create an environment where your conversations are known for producing positive change. This reputation will serve you in both your professional and personal life, opening doors and deepening trust. When you consistently leave people feeling better than when you began, you create a ripple effect. The encouragement you give them might influence how they speak to the next person. The clarity you provide might help them make a better decision that the respect you show might inspire them to treat someone else the same way. Your single conversation can set off a chain of positive outcomes you'll never fully see. This is the kind of communication that goes beyond information. It's transformation. It doesn't just transfer knowledge or opinions, it changes the emotional and mental state of the person you're speaking to. And when you can do that, you're no longer just a participant in conversations, you're a leader in them. That's the mark of a communicator people remember, respect, and want to listen to again.